Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard's co-director of charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, Billboard's chart manager / editorial liaison.
We have a lot to get to this week, including Billy Ray Cyrus on the podcast, celebrating 25 years of Achy Breaky Heart. You probably don't remember that, Trevor. You were just a few months old in 1992 when that song was a hit.
Yeah, I absolutely have no fond memories of back in the day hearing it on the radio or anything. I don't even remember when I guess it's one of those songs that you always just kind of, at some point, you just learn and you never forget it.
Right.
I don't remember when I learned it, but you always, but I mean, like, you know, the hook, you know, don't tell my heart is always, you just kind of know it at some point. It feels like you just, it just enters your head.
All right. Now, lots to get to on the podcast this week. We'll run down the top 10 of the Billboard Hot 100 this week, which includes an all-star new number one. Again, Billy Ray Cyrus is coming up as our guest. Jim Asker in Nashville chatted with Billy Ray about so many things. The 25th anniversary, as we just said, of Achy Breaky Heart, big hit in 1992. Also talks a little bit about his daughter, Miley Cyrus, as well as Noah Cyrus, and the hits they've had, and Miley currently on the cover of Billboard magazine. So that's all coming up, and we'll flash back even before 1992, 1991. If you think there are a lot of artists at number one now on the Hot 100, I'm the One by DJ Khaled, and all those guests, there were a lot more on a hit in 1991, almost 100 artists on one song. So we'll flash back to that in May 1991 coming up. But first, this week's top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Number 10. Number 9.
Spy with my little eye, a girly I can get cause she don't get too many likes. A curly headed cutie I could turn into my wife. Hate that means forever, ever, hold up, never mind.
Oh, number 7.
Represent, yeah, gotta represent. Chase a chick, never chase a bitch. Big firm, mask on, yeah, fuck it, mask off. Big firm, mask on.
Number 6.
Number 5. I'm in love with your body. Every day discovering something brand new. I'm in love with the shape of you.
Come on, be my baby. Come on, come on, be my baby.
Number 4.
After all, bitch, be humble. Hold up, bitch, sit down. Be humble. Hold up, bitch, sit down. Be humble. Bitch, sit down. Be humble.
Number 3.
Poquito, poquito. Y es que esa belleza es un rompecabezas. Pero pa' montarlo aquí tengo la pieza, oye.
Oh yeah. Despacito. Quiero respirar tu cuello.
Number 2.
Number 1. danger. See you watching, don't run out of time now. I'm the one, yeah.
Number one on the Billboard Hot 100, I'm the One with five acts. The first time there's ever been five individually credited acts. And number one, DJ Khaled featuring Justin Bieber, Quavo, Chance the Rapper, and Lil Wayne, all at number one this week on the Hot 100.
Lil Wayne back at number one. That's always good to see, especially, you know, all this Carter 5 drama, Birdman stuff. Good to see Weezy succeeding out there.
Yeah, and Bieber is fourth number one, but to everybody else other than Bieber and Lil Wayne, they're first number one. So Khaled said in his interview we did with Billboard, Billboard did a photo session with him afterwards. He said he's happy that he waited about 10 years of being in the business doing this to get that first number one. Makes it even sweeter to finally get that number one.
Yeah, I mean, this is his 10th album, he was saying, and in particular, I thought it was kind of cool because he, like you said, had mentioned that, you know, what had happened on the first album, what happened on the second album, what happened on the third album. He said, you know, even though it took 10 albums, he said he wouldn't change it for anything because it was supposed to happen right now when it did. So it's kind of a cool attitude to take on. I know some people might be, oh, finally, or I never thought it was going to happen. He seems to be cool with it, riding it, you know, said, hey, it was going to come someday, I guess, and here it is.
You see that sometimes in sports, too, like if someone wins a championship as a rookie, it just maybe they appreciate it differently. Because you maybe think it'll always be like this, but for someone who waits a long time, even like LeBron, who waited a long time to win till he got to Miami, sometimes you build up more of an appreciation the more you don't have it, and then it means that much more when you finally get that either number one or a title in sports.
Yeah, I think the Cleveland demographic is just tuned out completely of that, but agreed. Yeah.
He won in Cleveland. It's all good.
He did bring one home to Cleveland. He promised he would. So,
The other thing that's pretty interesting, Bieber. Has another number one. We said his fourth number one, but it's kind of interesting how big he's been even after Purpose. So 2015, his Purpose album came out, gave him his first three number ones on the Hot 100 with What Do You Mean, Sorry, and Love Yourself. So he had three huge number ones. But since that album's been out, he's had more top five hits as a featured artist and with extra singles outside of Purpose. Since that album, so as big as that was, he's had Cold Water featured on Major Lazer, got to number two on the Hot 100. Let Me Love You, DJ Snake, got to number four. Despacito this week goes up to number three, Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee. And now this new number one on DJ Khaled's song. At the moment, they've all peaked at one, two, three, and four. So it's kind of interesting, easy way to keep count of all those hits. But kind of shows how big he's been in between albums. Kind of rare that an artist maintains that kind of a hit presence in between albums. That just shows how big of a go-to artist he's become at this point.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, I think, too, that, like you said, he had three number ones from this album. They had a fourth single company that didn't do, you know, nearly on that level
right.
as the other ones did. But then, you know, it's funny, they almost, I don't want to say gave up on Purpose, but they really shifted the strategy to these featured roles now, and it's not like he's even competing with himself. Obviously, Purpose did very, very well on its own, but it is kind of neat that they've sort of, you know, in some ways made this the, you know, the fourth and the fifth and the sixth and the seventh single off of Purpose in some ways. I mean, Company and Cold Water were kind of out close enough in the same time. I mean, Let Me Love You and Cold Water definitely, you know, occupying chart space at the same time. Now we've got Despacito, I mean, at number three, we've got this I'm the One at number one, so this also kind of, you know, two at a time Bieber strategy seems to be working off for both songs. You know, sometimes it can kind of cannibalize one for the other, but both of them are shooting right up.
It's also we're in an era now where so many artists are saying now that they don't feel the need to put out an album. So maybe you'll even see more of this, not just from Bieber, but other artists. Good song comes along, just put it out in a streaming digital era.
Yeah, I mean, the Chainsmokers were kind of on that trail for a while. They seems like they ultimately gave in and put out the album, but yeah, people of Calvin Harris has said that for potentially there could be just a stream of singles coming on, some other artists too. And I think that, especially in a streaming appetite where, I mean, you see with the song like I'm the One, you know, I mean, it gets over 50 million streams in its first week. You hear it everywhere. Same thing kind of with Ed Sheeran when he came out earlier this year. It doesn't feel like you know, within a week or two, everyone kind of knows that song. So it's not like in the old days where, you know, it would take maybe 6-7 weeks for it to build on radio or get, you know, TV performances or whatever before people knew it and were familiar with it and, you know, in some ways were wanting something new. And, you know, like we saw with Chainsmokers in particular,
right.
Every, you know, month, 2 months, you can put out something and you don't have to worry about it. Is it going to run into the other? Is it going to stop the other thing, single the top 40? Is it going to, you know, be too much too quickly? I mean, even album wise with Drake, we see that every 6 months you can put something out. People will grab onto it instantly, go through it, consume it, and then they're ready for another one. It's nonstop.
Yeah. And it seems like I'm the One especially is going to have a long run. It's just starting at top 40 radio. Seems like a big song of the summer. We'll see how big Despacito becomes on English language radio. It's starting there now. So really, it could be two huge Bieber hits coming up. Again, both non-album singles from Bieber albums. So what other artists have had this kind of run where between albums, they've had hit collaborations and sort of maintained that kind of presence? Early 90s, actually, both Janet Jackson, Mariah Carey, both had huge hits in between albums. Both with Luther Vandross, actually. So in 1992, Janet and Luther had The Best Things in Life for Free.
From the Mo Money soundtrack. Classic Wayansville.
Top 10 hit 1992 for Mariah, Endless Love, their remake of Lionel Richie and Diana Ross's hit for number one. Theirs got to number two in 1994.
Couldn't quite get up there with Lionel and Diana, but who can, right?
So a similar kind of thing where they were between albums, but collaborated, had some big hits. I think maybe the most... applicable comparison to what Bieber is doing now is another Justin about 10 years ago, Timberlake, who we now know takes time between albums, went 7 years between albums in 2006 and 2013. But he had a bunch of hits in between. In fact, like Bieber, he had four top tens in between those albums. See if you remember these, Trevor. AO Technology, 50 Cent, featuring Timberlake and Timbaland.
Yeah, that one was kind of that was a weird one. That was almost, I don't know, that was an interesting song. That really kind of gravitated towards, like, the rap sound of the moment. Also, may have been definitely one of 50's last big pop hits, sadly.
And 2000 technology is outdated now, so that song might be a little outdated.
Maybe a little bit, yeah.
Early Twitter. after that, 2008, 4 Minutes, Madonna, featuring, again, Timberlake and Timbaland.
You can't, even when they're not on an album together, you can't separate Timberlake and Timbaland.
2009, Dead and Gone, T.I., featuring Timberlake.
Paying the favor back from My Love back in 2006.
And the other top 10, Love, Sex, Magic, Ciara, featuring Timberlake, 4 top 10s.
Again, yeah, that was also one of those interesting songs that was like, because Ciara had definitely been more in the R&B lane for the first two albums before that, and that was a more of a pop crossover one.
I thought that was going to be even bigger.
I'm surprised. Every time I even hear it now, I'm surprised it. I mean, it got to number 10, so it wasn't like it, you know, collapsed or anything like that. But I was surprised that it didn't really shoot her back into almost number one conversation. I guess at that time, I don't know if Rihanna had just cannibalize the space or what happened, but yeah.
And Timberlake even had 2 more hits that just missed the top 10, so he almost had 6 top 10s in that stretch between albums. Carry Out, Timbaland, again, featuring Timberlake, got to number 11. And then also at number 13 hit their live version of Hallelujah, Timberlake, Matt Morris, and Charlie Sexton. So he had a whole bunch of hits. You're making it look like you don't even remember that.
When was that? Was that from like an award show or something?
It was from a Haiti benefit in 2010.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So yeah, similar kind of what Bieber is doing now in between. Because after that, Suit and Tie would come out in 2013, 3 years later for Timberlake. But pretty good run of having hits. Even when people were waiting for a new album, he certainly gave fans lots of music.
Yeah, for sure. And Gary, you started off with some 90s divas. I'll throw in one more into the ring, my favorite. people forget this. You know, Whitney Houston took some time in between the Whitney album and I'm Your Baby Tonight. She had a duet with Aretha Franklin. It isn't, it wasn't, it ain't never gonna be, yeah. wasn't a smash hit, but the song It Isn't, It Was, and It Ain't Ever Gonna Be, which I think is so interesting that a song with probably the two best singers of all time, maybe, not even quite top, cracked the top 40, unfortunately.
You know where that peaked, right, on the Hot 100?
It was, I'm sure it was 41,
number
was
41.
It? Yeah, the curse of 41. It wasn't even top 40.
I remember thinking that at the time, watching it go up the chart and seeing it peak at 41 and just being, like you just said, so surprised that two huge names like that just missed the top 40 by one position. It just made it even more sad for chart fans.
Yeah, it was. It's gets a little asterisk. I mean, of course, this is the time. You know, Aretha was really in one of her last great stretches coming off the 80s, and Whitney obviously well in her prime. It seemed a little weird that, you know, people didn't bite onto it, but it's okay. It's all right.
Sadly, a fitting title for just missing the top 40, too.
It isn't. It wasn't. It ain't ever going to be a top 40 hit.
It was the second single, though, from the album, because Through the Storm with Elton John did get to number 16 first. That was a pretty big hit.
But even more recently, kind of like in the Timberlake lane, somebody who's really benefited from a non-album single in the past couple of years, Bruno Mars, having Uptown Funk with Mark Ronson. That's from Mark Ronson's album. But Bruno, especially, been kind of away for about a year or so, comes out with this monster smash single, really buys him a lot of time, it feels like, for his next album. People aren't quite as, you know, where is it, where is it? 14 weeks at number one on the Hot 100, obviously huge smash, the top song of the year, wins record of the year at the Grammys, and really just the momentum that song pushes into his next album for 24 Karat Magic is, I mean, you can't buy a hit that important in your entire career. And luckily for Bruno, you know, the timing was perfect. Also, somebody else who is actually currently in the midst of a hit in between albums, let's not forget Taylor Swift. She's got, you know, a soundtrack single, obviously, with the song I Don't Wanna Live Forever with Zayn, who also is in between albums. But, you know, assuming that TS6 eventually comes out, I mean, Taylor's also using this as a way to buy some time between 1989 and 1990, or whatever it'll be called.
All right. The other interesting thing about number one this week, we said before, five artists at number one. First time that's ever happened, and we're not talking about something like We Are the World, which had 43 acts, but it was under one billing, USA for Africa. So five individually credited artists at number one. Never happened on the Hot 100, but we've seen some other singles over the years with a whole bunch of superstars on songs before. I'll name a couple. We just saw recently Sucker for Pain was a number 15 Hot 100 hit, which also features Lil Wayne. It's so funny how many people are on this. Lil Wayne, Wiz Khalifa, and Imagine Dragons with Logic, who's headed for number one, we think, on the Billboard 200 for next week. And Ty Dolla $ign featuring ex-ambassadors.
Yeah, it's like if you take a spring concert at any university and, like, throw all six acts into a blender and that's what you get. Like, literally, it's just, I mean, rap rock has always kind of been a thing, but it literally came together on this track like never before.
Crimson flames stab through my head, but I might try. Countless fires flame and roll, using ideas as my mind.
One back in 1993, Hall of Fame rock all around. There's a cover of My Back Pages, originally a hit for the Byrds in the 60s, written by Bob Dylan. There was a live version recorded at a Dylan special concert in New York. Features everyone taking a verse. It's a really cool version. Bob Dylan, Roger McGuinn of the Byrds, Tom Petty, Neil Young, Eric Clapton, and a Beatle, George Harrison.
Just one Beatle?
How many more people do you need in that song?
I just, you know, I guess Paul and Ringo just, you know, was their voicemail too crammed? I'm sure they would have wanted to have been invited too.
All right, what songs do you remember, Trevor, with at least five acts?
I'll even flash back quickly to last year. You forget that a lot of these, especially these labels, rap labels, have a lot of compilation songs that, you know, a lot of their artists on their rosters will all join together. Last year we saw Champions, which has some of the artists we actually see on I'm the One this week. So get this. It's a Kanye West joint with Gucci Mane, Big Sean, Designer, Quavo, Yo Gotti, Travis Scott, and 2 Chainz. That's like...
How many is that?
That's eight.
Wow.
Eight people. Now, of course, it's like, you know, it's part of the label compilation. So everybody kind of wants to get a piece of it, which is kind of nice for them to do, but... I mean, eight, especially if they all have like eight individual standalone verses, that would be like a 20-minute song. But definitely that. And even I was going through Khaled's discography, because Khaled as we know, is one of the people who, as we see, is good at uniting a bunch of people together. I mean, there's so many Khaled songs that have like 5-6 people on it. I can't even, I'll name a few, but we'll go back way to his first Hot 100 entry, which was Holla at Me. This is DJ Khaled featuring Lil Wayne. So we got a little Wayne theme going here. Paul Wall, Fat Joe, Rick Ross, and Pitbull. I mean, he's got songs out here grinding with Akon, Plies, Young Jeezy, Rick Ross, Ace Hood, Trick Daddy, Lil Boosie. It's like running down like a concert list, you know, who's going to be at the festival this year. It's ridiculous. Unfortunately, all mine, like I said, are more rap hits, but I know that, Gary, you've also got one. Most of these are also guy-leaning.
In 1993, in that era when country was really dominated by a lot of women, they got together on a song, Dolly Parton. Her song, Romeo, features Tanya Tucker, Mary Chapin Carpenter, Pam Tillis, and Kathy Mattea. And in the video, the Romeo himself, Billy Ray Cyrus.
Romeo, Romeo, I wanna be a Juliet.
Here it goes.
So standing high, stepping low, step it out of hand, step to the side, let it slide, and step it up again.
So they're all singing about him. They're all at a bar singing about Romeo. He comes in, and they all crush on Billy Ray Cyrus. And what's really interesting, Dolly Parton has gone on to become Miley Cyrus's godmother. She was born just before that, in late 1992. So by the time the song came out, Miley was a little baby Miley at that point.
Baby Miley, godmama Dolly, daddy Billy. This is got a whole little Parton Cyrus, you know, world going on here. And of course, Miley and Dolly have, you know, duetted together plenty of times. Miley's a big fan of Jolene. She sung that in concert a couple times. I think even once with Dolly on Hannah Montana. So definitely a great relationship between the Cyrus crew and Miss Parton.
All right, let's find out more about all things the Cyrus family. Jim Asker in Nashville, our country senior chart manager, recently sat down with Billy Ray Cyrus, talked about everything from when Achy Breaky Heart started, became such a big hit in 1992. They talk about Miley. They talk about Noah Cyrus as well. So here's Billy Ray Cyrus with Jim Asker here on the Billboard Chartbeat podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Jim Asker at Billboard, and I am honored to be talking to the one and only Billy Ray Cyrus today. How are you?
I'm great, Jim Asker. You're more famous than me.
Yeah, right.
I'm serious. Like, Rocco, all of our buddies from the days.
Rocco
come by.
Costco. That's right. He was my rep at Mercury Records when Achy Breaky Heart blew up.
Yeah, man.
You came by our station, and you actually remember us in Baltimore standing on the side of the stage watching you take all those stuffed animals in your hand. Rocco goes, you've got to see this. And there was a pile of like stuffed animals. You came out right after the show and like gathered them up in your arms and carried them off. And people were throwing, women were throwing stuff, undergarments up, and it was just crazy.
It was crazy. But it was crazy. I love you telling me about those moments, because I actually, going to the edge of the stage after the show was over, and the people would stand there, and I just couldn't leave them.
You signed autographs and all that until everybody was gone. Do you still do that?
I, I haven't been on tour for a while. I'm looking forward to it. That's part of the reason why I've fired back up and
you've been busy
got the band back together and ready to go out and do some shows, because I want to go sign some autographs and see the fans and thank them for this wonderful 25 years.
You look great, by the way.
Thanks. Keep me in the dark.
Fantastic.
Don't light me up. As long as you don't light me up, I get ugly quick in the light.
When was the first time you heard Achy Breaky Heart? When it was it when the writer Don Von Tress played it for you? Was that the first time?
Well, Don Von Tress wrote the song.
Right.
But Joe Scaife, my producer Joe Scaife, mm-hmm. and Jim Cotton had came up to Huntington, West Virginia. I had recorded the title track, Some Gave All. And thank you very much. And we had nine more songs to go. And Joe came up to work up the back nine with me and the band in Huntington, West Virginia at the little bar I was playing up there called the Ragtime. And he brought one extra cassette. And I do this because it's great. I know you know what a cassette looks like, but to these young fellas, cassettes look like that. And you know what I mean? Like a cassette. Can you imagine? And cassette, we put it in a jam box and boom. As soon as it started, like from the intro and a verse and a chorus, I stood up physically, stood up and said, that's me. And I threw off one of the songs that I had written and added that song called Don't Tell My Heart that very day. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I threw off a song called Whiskey, Wine, and Beer. And I threw it off and still haven't cut it to this day.
Will you cut it at some point?
Maybe. I've written so many songs since then, actually. It's interesting to even think about it. Maybe I should. Just to go back and do it.
Your first album is tremendous.
Oh, thank you.
And thanks. I just want to know quickly, though, how you got signed to Mercury.
Well.
And how that became the first single.
Yeah. It's, I'll skip the 10 years that leads to that moment of, you know, I was going to be a professional baseball player. Right. And I hear this voice tell me buy a guitar and start a band and I'll find my purpose in life, and that's through the music. And I'm left-handed and I'm a baseball player, and then says no, buy a guitar and start a band, buy a left-handed guitar.
First baseman?
No, I was a catcher.
Okay.
I was going to be the next Johnny Bench.
Okay.
And was headed that direction, but I was listening to my intuition and also the fact that my knees hurt like hell from squatting up and down for mm-hmm. the first 20 years of my life. Hey, maybe that wouldn't be a bad idea. And
toughest position.
Yeah, it was pretty tough. I loved it, though. I loved it. But I started a band at 20 years old mm-hmm. and quit school, never looked back. Like, I gave up my scholarship and everything. Started a band, and as soon as I started, I got a house gig in Ironton, Ohio the first week. And so I just stayed there. So I was basically – I had a gig. That's the best way to get a band tight is have a gig. Because when you're going to get up in front of people 4 or 5 nights a week and play 4 or 5 sets a night, it's a great place to practice, you know, and get paid and do your thing. And so 10 years, skipping ahead, 10 years of trial and error and failure, many, many failures. I failed way more times than I ever succeeded.
All great people do a few times, right?
I failed a lot. I pretty much eliminated every way that wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. Therefore, finding the one way that would, and that one way being I had written Some Gave All. I was getting ready to turn 30 years old. I had 10 years of being told no into this town of Nashville mm-hmm. and L.A. And every time in Nashville, they'd say, well, you're rock and roll, man. You should go to L.A. When I went to L.A., it was the same exact opposite. You know, like, oh, man, your name's Billy Ray Cyrus, you're country. You should be in Nashville. So I didn't really, there wasn't a place for me to fit in the middle. Mm-hmm. But luckily I just kept writing songs. That's the way I made my living, was playing those bars and honky tonks. Mostly what I liked to do was get a house gig and sit there and build a great band. And that was the best way to get the best players, was have a job. And so I had written Some Gave All and wrote it in 1989 about a Vietnam veteran I met back in Huntington, West Virginia. I felt that inner voice telling me to come and play it for Harold Shedd, and I did.
Who was the head of Mercury Records at the time?
That's right. Harold Shedd was the head of Mercury Records. After 10 years of being told no, somebody finally stood up and said, I'm going to structure you a little deal. he left the room. Paul Lux came into the room, mm-hmm. shook my hand, welcome to Mercury Records. We'll get in touch with your manager, Jack McFadden. I leave out of there.
Jack had an association with Reba, right?
Jack had an association with Merle Haggard.
Isn't there a story where you opened for Reba?
There is a piece of that. You've got a good memory. Yeah, that's how I got to the attention of Harold Shedd.
Okay, I'm going back too far now.
No, you're only missing about a few months because the Reba happened before I came down to play for Harold.
Okay.
And Reba and Highway 101 was playing Freedom Hall in Louisville, Kentucky. That's right.
Paulette Carlson.
Yes, they were playing Freedom Hall, but the ticket sales was down.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody had told them there's a guy up in Flatwoods, Kentucky, that you put him on this bill and you'll sell it out. And they're going, what? How much you got to pay him? You probably don't have to pay him. Like, he probably would just let him. So they put me on the bill. The place went clean. Buddy Cannon heard about it and drove up to Louisville to see this unknown act.
Uh-huh.
And Buddy Cannon came back and told everybody at Mercury Records there's something there. But Harold don't move fast. This town don't move fast. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
And so about 3 or 4 months into it, I was getting pretty down, going, man, I guess they didn't like me and, you know, whatever. But I'd written Some Gave All and something told me, come play that for Harold. And his secretary let me in, said I got 5 minutes. I came in and played it, and then that's where the deal happened. But you're right.
What a great story.
It all led in through the Highway 101 in Reba, yes.
Awesome. And when did you decide to put Achy Breaky Heart as your first single? Did you decide on that?
No. Harold? Pretty much. It was kind of a group thought, though. Like, everybody was pretty lean in that direction. It felt like the right, you know, but it just felt like what it was
did
supposed to
be. Did you have any idea it would blow up like it did?
No, not really. Not like that. I couldn't even imagine that. Remember, you're talking to a guy that lived in his car.
It pretty much started the line dancing craze. I was there, so I remember.
You were there.
You know, and it just blew up like nothing I had ever seen. Your first album, though, Some Gave All, tremendous album. I'm not just saying that, but it spent 34 weeks at number one on our top country albums chart. 17 weeks on the Billboard 200. That's crazy.
All gave some. Some gave all. Some stood through for the red, white, and blue. Some had to fall.
And the album is real. Can I just ask, that album is really deep. Some great songs. Some really. And Achy Breaky Heart's a great song. Did you ever think that, okay, this serious project I have, this album is a pretty deep project, that the fun song might diminish how deep that album was? Or no?
At that time, remember, I'm living in my car. Homeless. You ever lived in a Chevy Beretta? There's not a lot of room, and that was, I'd been in there for about a year at that time. I was more like, let's just, again, started with Some Gave All, then we had the
Could
other
Have
songs.
Been Me.
That's right. And then
Country Rock, great song.
Yes, Could Have Been
Did
Me.
Did you write that?
No, I didn't. Reed Nelson wrote that. I loved that song, Could Have Been Me. That was our second follow-up. And it turned out to be, you know, a great record. Like, it was the right call to follow up Achy Breaky Heart, which was just a good sequence.
It just showed a different side of you and how deep that album was. And that Achy Breaky Fever, it was pop culture. From sleeping in your car to becoming a mega pop culture star, that had to be kind of jarring for you as a young man, right?
Well, I wasn't that young, though. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I was
about 30.
I was 29 maybe when it came out.
Okay.
Then I turned 30. And so.
But you go from sleeping in your car to everybody wanting a piece of you in like 10 weeks time.
It was pretty crazy. That part was crazy. Now, there's a little bit of this, in a way, it's on a different scale. But in Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia, I was already kind of living that, like, I couldn't go out the grocery store out in that realm. Like, people thought I'd already made it. That's what was a bit of a catch-22 for me there. They already thought I'd done something.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I knew the reality. Only thing, I'm here and I can open up all these shows and do all this stuff, but I need a record deal. I need a somebody to help me facilitate getting the music heard around the world. That was my goal, was to make music that could move an audience around the world. And so when Mercury Records and PolyGram came into the picture, that was the missing link.
Great story. So let's jump to the 25th anniversary recording and what led to that. And the depth of it with, like, how many different versions? Six?
I just saw
the Espanol version come in today.
Yeah, there's probably six right now, but there's really three. Espanol is one that, do you know the guys on there? Have you ever heard?
No, I don't. I just want to say before that, if I can, I love the mix from Muscle Shoals. It's got a soulful, gritty sound, and I just love it.
Thank you. I'll start with that one because that's really the nucleus of anything that comes off of this mix.
Are they the same players who originally played?
One, the guitar player, Keith Hinton, and Don Von Tress, who wrote the song. And this really goes back to your first question about when Don and the song. All I knew was I loved his demo. And when Don and I started talking about doing a recut of it, I said, Don, I never felt like I ever beat your demo. Like, I loved the southern swampiness of your original demo.
Yeah, and you captured that.
It's pretty.
Love it.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Don's, is that what you wanted on the first one? Or
I don't know. It was kind of like I wanted that. I felt like even when I'd listen to it, I'd think, man, I think I still like Don's demo better.
Who produced this version, the update?
Don and I produced this, yeah. And Don made a real good call right out of the box. He said, dude, if you want to capture my demo, you need to come to Muscle Shoals. Well, I've always wanted to come to record at Muscle Shoals anyway. I had never been there.
So many great albums recorded there.
It's as small as
this conference room we're sitting in right now.
I know. And it's known as the home of the groove. What a great place to make a record, the home of the groove. So
one of my favorite, I shouldn't take time, being self-absorbed, but one of my first favorite albums of all time, The Little Spark of the High Heel Boys, Traffic, was recorded there at Muscle Shoals.
Sure,
the
was.
Stones yeah. recorded there.
At Fame.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, go on.
Sorry
to interrupt.
No, you're right on. It's Muscle Shoals. And Don said, hey, man, you come down here, I'll surround you with some swampers. When we use horn players, it's really three dudes with horns, not synthesizer. Keith Hinton, we brought Keith Hinton back in from my original cut, and Keith Hinton played on Don's original demo. So we just kind of had it all to meet there in Muscle Shoals. There was a time I'm like, man, Muscle Shoals, that might be a long drive. I said, maybe we should just do it now. And he said, if you really want to capture my demo, I said, dude, I want it.
How long did you spend there?
I was there for a day, and we cut the track that morning, and I did all my vocals immediately. I like to, once I get sweaty and going, like I just keep on going until I do all my lead vocals, and then I do the harmonies, and I stacked four or five different parts. I did a lot of vocals in about 4 hours of that afternoon. We spent the morning making the track, and I left there going, man, this thing's buzzing, this feels good. You know that on the album, the first track, that was me doing a lot of those harmonies on that whole album, which at that time in Nashville, that wasn't done a whole lot.
It was not really heard
there
of at
was,
the time.
Yeah, they didn't hear of that, and they didn't hear of using your band a whole lot.
Right.
And I insisted on using my band.
Session players.
Yeah, I wanted to use my band and capture. I'd always been a big Springsteen fan.
Me too.
The albums I loved most was when he'd work them up with the band.
I've actually been to over 100 Springsteen shows.
No way.
Yeah. He was my first attachment to rock and roll, really.
Man, he's my hero.
1976 was my first show.
I hate to get on.
I hate to give away age.
I'm going to fan out. I love Bruce Springsteen. Honestly, I wouldn't be here without Bruce Springsteen. Like, he was an inspiration. He is an inspiration.
Once you see him with that work ethic, you've got that work ethic on stage.
Man, I can only hope to have a part of the way the boss works on stage. I've seen him play 3 hours, 4 hours.
I saw one go over 4 hours. But so let's talk about the Espanol version.
And do you know, but I must say, there is that wonderful little moment when, you know, the reaction to Achy Breaky, it was either love it or hate it, and it was coming from different directions, and the boss played it, I think, in Philadelphia.
Yeah, he did.
And
exactly. I've heard it.
I don't care what you say. It's just a damn good little song.
I heard it on a bootleg tape.
Yeah, love that. At that same time, June of 92, Johnny Cash had written me a handwritten letter and said some very nice things, said he was in my corner. Carl Perkins had became like my best friend. Carl Perkins saying, dude, man, don't be running around, you know, Music Row, like all these cats trying to chase the cat's tail and say, well, if that's working for him, I'll go do that. He said, be yourself no matter what happens. Be yourself. And be real. It's just about being real. And Carl, you know, he became a really great friend.
That's awesome.
Carl was a great friend. Waylon Jennings then became a great friend. George Jones, you know, the legends. You know who would spend a lot of time at my house that I know you must be a big, Vern Gosden.
Oh, I love Vern Gosden.
You love Vern Gosden?
One of the great country voices ever.
Greatest oh, the voice, man.
What do you think of, I have to ask this, what do you think of country music 25 years later, country radio? It's been a lot of changes. Back when I first met you, it was one program director running one station. Now it's become chains, and the music's definitely changed. So
let's look at the whole business.
It's all
changed.
Where
do you find a record store?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you find a record? It's like the whole thing has changed.
Do you listen to country still?
There's a lot of great artists out there.
There really are.
There's some new artists and some great artists that are bringing the innovation. Country music, I think, is in a great spot right now. Great.
I mean, Sam Hunt's been on top of our Hot Country Songs chart for 12 weeks now.
That's amazing. Sam's a good guy. Good guy, great artist.
And so are you going to go on the road with a new album? You're changing your name to just Cyrus?
Well, my name's always been Cyrus, but I'm Billy Ray Cyrus.
Because you said you wanted to start your career with your name as Cyrus.
I wanted to be Cyrus. The album was called Some Gave All. When Mercury Records came to see me, all the T-shirts said Cyrus, Some Gave All. That was what. But, hey, they had some marketing people over there that said, wait a minute, you're selling all these places out up here, and when they put on the marquee is Billy Ray Cyrus. And I know, but I just want them to use Cyrus. And they, you know, somebody in Switzerland said, the Billy Ray Cyrus. And I wasn't in a part. I wasn't going to argue about that.
So when will a new album come out?
Well, we're in the process. As you know, it's all about streaming now. Oh, yeah. I've written more songs in the last month. I have written more songs than that.
You solo writing?
I write a lot by myself. My songs come really fast in a moment of inspiration and desperation.
I just want to mention really quick, Humble and Kind, Tim McGraw, McKinnon wrote that song. That was the first solo written number one in about 4 years, I think, when that hit the top of the charts.
Wow.
And then Little Big Town just had the Taylor Swift Better Man, which is solo written. But we need to get that trend back of solo written songs.
I love that.
Just my opinion.
I've been writing just about everything. It comes really quick when I hear a song in my head. Nowadays I have my phone, hit record, and it's the same as what I used to write. Some Gave All of those songs on was on a micro cassette recorder.
Mm-hmm.
I did like this. But now it's just, you know, I don't write the songs with my hand. I just hear what I hear in my head and sing it and play it. While I'm doing this right now, I want to say thanks to a lot of people for allowing me to
live
this dream. You did. And honestly, Rocco made it happen.
Rocco, Bobby Young, all those guys at Mercury back then.
All those guys. I mean, there was a team of people. Okay, when you say, okay, what's everything has changed in our business?
It's still relationship based, though.
It's still relation. And I hope it's still about the song. Like, that's what my hope is. And that's why when you mentioned the Cyrus, I quoted to Rolling Stone. I said, all I want to be is a singer songwriter. I'm going back to my roots.
But you've also done well.
Maybe just change my name
as an actor. Your show is still The King's coming back on.
It is. I've done.
Do you like that as much as you like performing music?
I love playing music. I was actually born and very natural. Comes to me natural to play and sing. And again, I hear music. I play everything by ear. Like, I have no training of. I wish I did, but I can't. Like, everything I play by ear, and I play life by ear. Everything about it. And
well, the greatest players play in our kind of music that we love. You know, the greatest rock and rollers, country artists play by ear, I think. So,
now, did you know Ronnie Millsap is on this new version?
I did not.
When you talk about greatest players,
he's playing keyboards on your own.
Ronnie Millsap, when you hear that piano honking in there, that's Ronnie Millsap, and he came on. He was one of the. I guess he came on about a month ago, and somebody, Don had mentioned, you know, Ronnie had the song on hold for years or for a while, but his label didn't let him cut it, but he always loved it. And then we got the track, and I said, hey, I wonder if Ronnie won't, and he came straight in. And
that's awesome.
You could hear the way he's playing is with the passion of what he would have done 27 years ago on it. Like, he just nailed it, and he fits so well with our Muscle Shoals project. So I want to mention Ronnie Millsap's on there.
Speaking of other people, you have to be proud of your family. I mean, you've got like four kids with hits on the charts.
Besides
Miley, there's Noah and Trace. And you have to be proud of.
I'm proud of all.
There's one more.
I'm really proud. I have a son, Brazen. And then my wife and my other daughter, Brandy. They have a television show. But I'll say Noah and Miley, their instincts are just so right on with music, lyrics, harmony, vibe, passion.
I mean, and like you, Miley's her own person. And
she is.
Does it her way, right?
Trust me. And Noah, too. Mm-hmm. Noah is very strong in knowing what she wants to write, what she wants to sound like. And I'm proud of both of them for that. It's a little bit of what Carl said to me. Don't be chasing the cat's tail. Do your thing.
Let's not wait for the 50th anniversary of Achy Breaky to talk again, okay?
I don't know that. Let's please don't, because I'm not going to make it for that.
I don't think I'll make it
either. I'm not going to make it. Let's make it sooner than later.
Thank you, Billy Ray Cyrus. All the luck in the world to you. I think this new version of Achy Breaky Heart's going to be great. I think your TV show will do great again. I mean, you've got so much going on. It's just been a pleasure talking to you. This is Jim Asker at Billboard. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jim. That was fantastic.
The starting line of the rest of my life, as ready as I've ever been. Got the hunger and the stars in my eyes, the prize is mine to win.
She's waiting on my blessings before she hits that old road. But baby, get ready. Yes,
Billy Ray Cyrus on the Billboard Chartbeat podcast. So cool. So nice of him to take that time to chat with Jim Asker here on the Billboard Chartbeat podcast. One thing we should mention, Trevor, because I think it's so interesting for the history of Achy Breaky Heart. Could have been a hit for the Marcy Brothers in 1991, a year before Billy Ray Cyrus's version came out. Group the Marcy Brothers, three brothers, Kevin, Chris, and Kendall, released the song as a single on Atlantic Records, didn't hit our Hot Country Songs chart, so Billy Ray Cyrus recorded it, made it a hit.
Huh.
So there's just lost version of it. But what's funny, I was on YouTube looking at that version. I'm in the comments section, and someone said, if this song had been a hit in 1991, maybe wouldn't have been. Country star Billy Ray Cyrus, therefore no pop star Hannah Montana or twerk star Miley Cyrus.
I like how we make that designation between Hannah Montana and Miley Cyrus. Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah, they go on, they say, what path would popular music and pop culture have taken had this song not been covered by Billy Ray? Worth contemplating.
Wow, we may have never had a Wrecking Ball. We may have, yeah. We may never have had Miley What's Good. Maybe that would have been some good news for Robin Thicke. That could be, yeah, the path of pop would have been crazy different. Though, of course, you know, there's a chance Miley obviously could have still been herself.
And the funny thing, too, is someone named Mackenzie Marcy made the next comment. She said, I would have been the, quote, twerk star, considering I'm Kevin's daughter, LOL. So she might have been Miley, one of the Marcy brothers. daughters.
The daughter is looking at that. Oh, that's great.
She has a sense of humor about it.
Could it be? Who knows? You know, who knows? Revisionist history.
And I really dug into this, too. I wound up completely down this Marcy Brothers.
Well, Gary was in this rabbit hole.
Hole.
You get it and see these YouTube comments. That's how you get started. You just keep clicking and scrolling.
Kendall Marcy, one of the Marcy Brothers, he's gone on to play in Brad Paisley's live band called the Drama Kings since 1999. So for almost 20 years now, he's had a really good career in Brad Paisley's band.
I feel like Billy Ray should get the Marcy Brothers together and do some sort of, you know, foursome version of the song at some, I don't know, some CMA award show, maybe this year for 25 years. That would be kind of fun.
And the other comment, last one I'll mention, someone said they really, I didn't even notice this until I saw this comment. The Marcy Brothers version isn't Achy Breaky Heart, it's Achy Breakin' Heart. So Billy Ray Cyrus changed it to Achy Breaky. And this person thinks that that might have been all it needed to become a smash because it had a little quirk like that. The rhyme just captured listeners' attention that much easier.
The minute you said that, I said, ooh, it's just that little fix that can go, you know, pop songwriting is literally sometimes just the right thing at the right place. And yeah, maybe if that was Billy Ray himself who suggested it, that literally could have been a million-dollar career-changing switch.
So that original version released in 1991. Let's stay in 1991 for this week's flashback. Go back to this week, May 1991. This song was peaking in early May 1991 at number 11 on the Hot 100. Going back 26 years, Voices That Care got to number 11 on the Hot 100. Do you remember the song, Trevor?
No, it's kind of funny. It's one of the, I guess, We Are the World kind of kicked off this round of supergroup songs. Thank you, Michael Jackson. That kind of brings a star power to it. This is one of the ones that kind of doesn't seem to have, I don't want to say aged very well, but
it's very of the time because of pretty much who was on it. And because it was specifically around Operation Desert Storm. It was political in the sense it didn't take sides. It was just, we support our troops. The chorus is stand tall, stand proud. Voices That Care are crying out loud in support of the troops. So it was very just a positive song that everyone was behind the troops. It supported the International Red Cross as well. It wasn't the biggest radio hit. It was more of a sales hit that drove it up the Hot 100. But, so everyone remembers We Are the World. What's interesting, I guess one of the main differences is that was all musicians. This was just a complete cross-section of entertainment. It was musicians, but it was also athletes, movie stars, TV stars. It was just about almost 100 people in the choir, on the chorus. So that's something that We Are the World didn't have. This song has Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson singing the song on a basketball court in the video. And there's also a clip of Wayne Gretzky. He doesn't sing on the song, but they show him. Mike Tyson is on the song. It's got Jordan, Magic Johnson, Mike Tyson,
Jordan,
Wayne Gretzky.
He doesn't sing, does he?
Yeah, he sings on the song.
Michael Jordan sings on it? I mean, it is kind of weird even just to see in the video, because it kind of, if you see the video, it starts with some singers and it kind of has a montage of people as it goes through it. It is kind of weird because all of a sudden you're like, wait, is that Michael Jordan just in a music video lip syncing? And I guess Magic Johnson too, you know, getting his start, he'd be in a Michael Jackson music video, you know, maybe a year, not even a year later, remember the time. But definitely an interesting kind of group. I'm trying to think of, you know, in a weird way, I guess, because maybe social media kind of has blurred a lot of the lines. This could work today, in a sense. Like, you could definitely feel like entertainers and musicians are way more connected than maybe they used to be.
Yeah, we talked about this on the podcast a few weeks ago, the newer version of We Are the World in 2010.
And it's kind of funny to see who's on this particular song because, you know, it's an early Celine Dion before she really made her splash into the U.S. with, you know, The Power of Love and some of those songs that are coming later. Got some people from New Edition, Ralph Tresvant up there.
He starts the song.
Singing the opening, And I was surprised. I didn't realize that they, you know, it's sort of a group chorus like this. Luther Vandross basically gets the entire hook to himself. Like, he, at least at first took, he was right. bank. Like, it's like he gets an extended part. It's like, okay, well, Luther is the man, obviously a fantastic singer, so nothing to be upset about there. Yeah. I mean, Will Smith kind of in some of his early days, too.
The Will Smith rap is classic on that song. It's so it's so let's put a little poppy rap, little fit.
And what is a good 1991 David Foster produced song without a Kenny G saxophone solo?
Michael Bolton, obviously, that was his time for just having hit after hit. What's interesting too, the very last solo singer who sings a verse is a guy named Warren Wiebe, who was unknown, but he was a favorite of David Foster. So you have all these names as the lead vocalist, who we just mentioned: Celine, Luther, Garth Brooks, Michael Bolton, Will Smith on rap, and Warren Wiebe. So his moment shined on that song. Other people who are in the chorus and in the video, it's just such a Downtown Julie Brown is on there, Chevy Chase, Cindy Crawford, Kevin Costner, Sally Field, Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah, it's like a who's who of celebrities really at that time.
Meryl Streep is on there, Brooke Shields,
yeah.
Alyssa Milano, Jean-Claude Van Damme is on there too.
Jean-Claude Van Damme, yeah, he is. Henry Winkler, is that Fonzie?
Yeah.
From way back in Happy Days. I mean, pulling it back. Also, Little Richard getting a solo time on the song as well. So definitely some of the old icons mixed with contemporary stars at the time. Richard Gere up there as well, enjoying some of that Pretty Woman fame at the time. I mean, this is really just – I almost wonder how do you – I guess, you know, obviously it's connections and maybe agents and representatives and Billy Crystal and everything. Right. I mean, this is just –
Dominique Wilkins too.
This is just – I mean, what a – like, what's the net worth of that room?
And Billboard's own former Billboard Nashville correspondent, Jimmy Buffett, on there as well.
Jimmy Buffett? Oh, yeah, that's right. Before Margaritaville cashed out.
Oh, one other person on that song, Voices of the Cure, Trevor, was Tiffany. And I actually asked her about this song. I interviewed her a year ago when it was the 25th anniversary. Here's what she had to say. She remembered that recording the song. '90s fashion, Trevor. You missed it. You just missed early '90s fashion.
Yeah, definitely go watch that video if you really want to get a nice blast from the past, or if you want to find out what it was like if you weren't around.
All right, join us next week on the Billboard Chartbeat podcast. We'll see if I don't know if we can have an as exciting a Hot 100 number one as we did this week. Not every week, as we said, it's the first time it's ever happened. Five acts at number one debut with "I'm the One," but something always happens that's exciting.
Yeah, and things creeping up as well. I mean, it almost Bieber's at 1 in 3. Could he make 1 in 2? Could he change himself out? That's always in the race. And it's funny, we had 3 number ones in the past 3 weeks, so you can never really discount if Bruno is still in the race. Kendrick's still up there as well, the album doing particularly well. Maybe even Ed, you know, still in the top 5. So definitely a lot of turnover, but kind of makes it exciting. You know, it feels like there's more of a race going on now. So, yeah, we'll see how the race pans out.
Which of those Justin Timberlake songs we mentioned earlier should we close with, Trevor?
What are the options again? Give me one more time.
AO Technology, 4 minutes, Dead and Gone, Love, Sex, Magic. That's the one we both like. Sierra.
Yeah, Dead and Gone is a little too somber. It's a little too somber. Love, Sex, and Magic is cool. Sierra is all, you know.
We'll make it
give Sierra some shine.
We'll make it a bigger hit after all these years.
Baby, on my show, just you in the crowd, doing tricks you never seen. Let that I can make you believe. Love and sex and magic. So let me drive my body around you. I bet you
seems